Hello, everybody. This is the Friendly Bear Podcast, where we interview some of the best and brightest traders in the trading community. Listen to inspiring stories and nuggets of insight from current and future game changers in the trading space. Listen and learn as we explore all types of trading niches with some of the best in the industry from a Friendly Bear point of view. Make sure to check out the Friendly Bear Podcast's new YouTube channel called Friendly Bear Research, which includes all the podcast video content and supplemental screen shares. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. With that being said, I'm your host, David, aka Reverse Long, and this is the Friendly Bear Podcast. Let's dive in. What's up, guys? This is David, aka Reverse Long, and today I'm here with Evan Shunk. Evan is a trader that I found out about last year, actually through a Tim Sykes YouTube interview. And it's funny how we all like Tim Sykes, like is the one that brings everything to our attention, you know? So like I found out about Evan and I saw he's active on Twitter and like we have the same part of like the same community almost. And I didn't know about him up until recently where I looked into him, but besides after that interview, and I decided to reach out to him, you know, so seems like a smart guy and a good trader. And it's crazy is he actually has a brother that trades and they're both successful traders. And I find that so interesting, you know, so like we're going to ask about that and find out more about Evan. And another cool thing about Evan is that, OK, so he's in L.A. and I'm in L.A. and he went to UCLA around the same time I did. So there's a lot of, you know, just coincidence, you know, so I just sort of feel like reach out to him and see what he's up to. So, you know, so with all that being said, what's up, Evan, man? How's it going?
I'm good. How are you, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So, okay. So let's get a little story and an update, actually. So yeah. First, when was the interview you did with Tim Sykes?
That was, I want to say, I mean, like 7 months ago now? Eight?
Yeah. Cool.
Just before, you know, 2022 started.
Yeah, that was a cool one. So you did that in a studio. I remember seeing there was like some cool props or something on there.
Oh, yeah. He had this studio out in Burbank somewhere and I met him.
Yeah, that's right. Now it's vague in my memory. So yeah. It's like it was like a motorcycle in there or something like that. It was like one of those studios.
There was a bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah, it was crazy. But really interesting. So that was the first time I heard of you. I didn't, you know, and I was like, okay, so this is cool. Let me find out more about him. Because he was saying that he was scared for you because you're shorting.
Yeah, I know.
I'm shorting at the time, you know, yeah. Also. So first let's get a little background story about you and some more information, how you got started with trading.
You know, it's really just one of those, like, you know, how everyone knows that people are making it in this game, but everyone wants to know how they're doing it. You know, and if there's other people doing it, why can't you? So I was always that type that, you know, wanted to figure it out. I was always just fascinated with the market, you know, in college. But I mean, of course, you're just, you know, buying and holding whatever stocks you're getting or buying earnings report. I did that a lot. You'd be surprised, actually. I mean, I'm gambling. I actually hit a bunch of those, but I lost a bunch as well. I remember those days. But there was never any sort of fundamental foundation for why I should be placing trades. So I wanted to figure it out. And so I joined Timothy Sykes Challenge Chat after college. I wasn't really sure exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew that whatever it was, I wanted my work to be around the stock market, just anywhere that the market is involved in some way. That's just where I wanted to work. I tried a Series 66. I tried, you know, getting, you know, that type of job underneath some financial advisor or something, you know, income in entry level job. It's something like that. I chose to go with day trading. I found Tim Sykes. He was getting interviewed by Steve Harvey when I walked into my.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. You saw that one?
Yeah. I didn't see the, I mean, I think I've seen it in the past, but I've seen clips of it ever since then. I don't remember the whole thing.
Yeah. But I just walked into my house and my dad was there. Or no, it was my dad's caretaker at the time. She was watching Steve Harvey and I just walked in. I saw Sykes talking on Steve Harvey and I listened and I'm like, all right, I like this guy. And I'm going to go on YouTube and I'm going to find him. And I listened to him and I'm like, this sounds like this is my guy. I'm gonna start right here. I need some sort of foundation because I have no idea where to begin. You know, no one does in trading. It's really important to have some sort of guidance. And that's what I did. That's how I got started.
That's crazy. Okay, so what did you study in college? You said you were going for the series exams. Actually, one of those.
Yeah, I didn't have much of a background in finance or anything. So I needed some sort of something on my resume to get me some sort of entry level in a financial firm or anything like that. So I was applying for a Series 66. I was taking those tests to get a license just to have something on my background, because in college at UCLA, I majored in anthropology.
So okay.
They don't care about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Cool.
So about your brother. Okay. So maybe your brother's going to be for another interview, but just briefly, how did your brother get involved and how did that like influence your, I don't know, to study more, or how did that work into your whole success?
So I was doing trading, you know, I started 2 years before my brother, about 20 months before him. And I always told him, you know, once I figure it out, once I got something going, like I'll teach you, I'll help you if I ever get profitable. And he actually just, the timing just was perfect because COVID happened in 2020. Yeah. And right at the start of 2020 is when I really started to become a profitable trader. I told my brother, because my brother actually lost his job from COVID. He was a piano teacher. He's a really good musician, and he couldn't teach his students anymore because they weren't coming in for COVID and he wasn't getting paid. So he just transferred all this time into me teaching him how to trade, you know. So he watched every DVD, everything I watched, you know, trading tickers, you name it. He went through the whole process, and I built the system. I had a bunch of data tracked from gappers. And I told him about it, except I wasn't really applying my system yet, but I showed it to him because at the time I was actually profitable discretionary trading. I wasn't much of a very systematic trader as I am now. But that changed I built the system. I didn't apply it. My brother saw it and he was like, wait, dude, I hate price action. I'm not good at discretionary like you're doing right now. I can't do that. I'm still a beginner. Can I just do this? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I haven't fully tested it yet, but on paper, it looks really, really good. And he was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And he did it. And I think it was like within the first week he made, like there was this day he made like $5,000 in one day just using my system. And I made like maybe $1,000 that day. And right then and there, I was like, okay, wow, I think this system works. I'm now going to start doing both, more system and discretionary trading.
So interesting. So a few things there. I'm going to start with what you just left off with. So when did you, because I know like Sykes's room is pretty much discretionary.
Right.
And so when did that, I didn't even know what discretionary versus systematic was up until like when I went to Puerto Rico. I just was doing what I was told up until then. So how did you find out about this way to do like a system, like come up with data, break it down,
right,
reverse engineer stuff that works and come up with the system? And I guess it makes it easier for you to trade because you know, discretionary, you can be kind of like all over the place sometimes.
Correct. Yeah.
You know,
it's tough. Discretionary is really tough. I mean, I think it's a lot harder in my opinion. But Pitani shows you, he shows you the door, you know, in trading tickers one and in trading tickers two for how to start, you know, harvesting data and collecting it, like his overextended gap down pattern. He shows you know, the statistics and how, what he's tracking, what he's looked for. And so he can have a statistical edge, a directional edge in what he's a play he's trying to attack that day. And so Ducks, I mean, sorry, Ducks comes next, but Brittani really opened that door for me. And so that's how I started concentrating on data and doing spreadsheets and the webinars that he would give in the challenge chat room. I mean, I would go through way back in time. I watched so many, like from 2015, 16, 17, 18, you name it. I was watching all of Brittani's old webinars and even some of the webinars, he showed some good examples of how he would do that. And how you would track data and use it. And then I found Dux, because Dux was actually still in the chat room when I joined in 2018.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you were there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just, you know, on his way out, but he was still there a little bit. I bought his DVD, because that's how I found out about Dux, was through the Tim Challenge room. And I bought his DVD, and he went over gappers very well. Grattani never went over gappers. He went over tracking data and overextended gap downs. But when I saw Grattani talk about, Dux talk about gappers, that really gravitated me towards that pattern, because they were more frequent, and there's a lot more to track. And so that really attracted me to it. And, you know, Dux, that's where he got famous off, you know, the gap up short way back in the day. That was like pattern, right? Yeah. And so that's what made me concentrate on gappers and tracking data, were those two guys.
Excellent. Okay. And then also, you started 2018. So like, you weren't part of the wave of like, starting at 2020, where everybody and their mom has like a Robinhood account and like everybody's a trader. So you had put in countless hours before that. So how did that play out? Like do you think a lot? Like, I reflect a lot myself, like, wow, it's a good thing I was prepared at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so how much did that factor in, and when did you switch to like become more systematic? Was it like when the COVID hit and afterwards and before that?
It hit. So before my systematic, when I went just full systematic trading, it was kind of half, you know. I had data that I was using my data for a directional edge, but I was playing the price action. It was, you know, more so than having, you know, strict entries and exits. That worked, you know, and it was working. I was profitable. It was nothing crazy. But what made me do the big switch is seeing how it worked for my brother so quickly. And when I saw him make $4,000 more than me in one day, you know, we're very competitive. And I was like, oh my gosh, it works. So I was like, I got to do it. I mean, at least do both of them, have like, you know, my system tradings, and then also play price action, but like separate them. Maybe in two different accounts. I only have one account at the time, but separate them mentally in my head. Like, whatever shares I put in system, I don't touch those shares. And whatever shares I want to do price action, I'll only touch those shares. I would do that. But most of the profits would always come from the systematic. I ended up finding out. I always feel the market, it's always discretionary. It's hard. I mean, I'm still practicing it. But I know for me, I feel the market is just so wired to taking advantage of your emotions and trying to get you to cover, trying to get you to stop out.
Yeah.
Trying to fake you out all the time. And so without my data, you know, giving me that confidence and comfortability to withstand certain moves that may just be, you know, just riggers trying to stop you out. Really was some turning points for me. Just trusting my data was a huge turning point.
And when you discovered that systematic approach from Grattani and Dux at first, did it make sense to you right away? Like, oh, this is the route I need to focus on a little bit more. Discretionary is cool, because like, I understand up until now, I understand how, you know, it's a good way to learn the ropes.
Yes.
But then like, you know, you're like, okay, how did your personality fit with systematic? Like, were you always I know, like for me in the past, when I liked fantasy baseball, I guess I was a systematic with fantasy baseball, not with trading. But were you good at math, or were there other things like that you were had a systematic approach that you when you discovered systematic trading, you're like, okay, let me put some effort into this and go into this and see what happens.
I mean, I don't have the greatest math background. I mean, I took statistics in college and you know, whatnot, the basics, algebra two, and, you know, no calculus or anything. When I was able to see the statistical edges on paper, it really showed me that it felt like this is the right way. I mean, if you have a statistical edge, I mean, that's how you can, I feel like, really make money in the market. you know, if you're not the best discretionary trader. I mean, that and just sizing up is also really tough doing it discretionary. When you have a system involved and you know, like if this pattern comes this amount times a year, and the win rate's about this much, you can even have a pretty good idea of what you'll, you know, should get by the end of the year. And you could test your downswings. You test a lot of things when you have numbers in front of you.
Yeah. Okay. So, the gap ups. So you got the gap up idea from what I understand from Ducks. He highlighted it. He's like, "Oh, I'm doing this," and you're like, "Oh, that makes a lot of sense." Yeah. And so how has that morphed? Has that changed? Because like I don't know. I when I was in Puerto Rico and I was watching some traders trade the gap ups, it seemed like, you know, it was like, I guess maybe the couple of months that I was watching them play it, it seemed to have like kind of, it wasn't the same as it was like a year before. That was last year. So it wasn't the same as it was in 2020, for example.
So
how often how different is it now than when you started, and how do you go about adapting?
Yeah. You got to really keep up with your data. Gappers are not the same anymore. I don't think it'll ever be like 2020. Ever again. I doubt it. 2020 was an anomaly year for gappers. I mean, you had so many gappers coming every single day, and the success rate of them failing in 2020 was so consistent. It was the year of gappers. If you were shorting gappers in 2020, you were probably making pretty good money. 2021, it started downtrending a bit, but it was still good. It got a little crazy sometimes, but so overall pretty consistent. And then in 2022, gappers are just not the same anymore. Even in part of 2021, they just not, my criteria is just, is really tough to find a consistent gapper right now, unless there's some like pretty good dilution involved in the fundamentals. Other than that, I've been avoiding most gappers. I only have one gapper criteria right now. Because the variability and the changing in my data is making me stay away from them.
Yeah. And with your system, okay, so when it stops working as well as it did in the past,
yeah,
do you try to maybe investigate why that is? Like maybe there's something in there.
Yes.
Yeah. A new factor involved, and that factor alone is a red flag to that this is not going to work.
Whenever I start having a downswing that's, you know, a little bit more severe than normal, I'm always just, you know, like, well, shoot, I got to figure this out. And so I go in the data and I test and I cross analyze, you know, every factor. I've gotten really good at knowing what I want to look for. And then I'll usually find what's going on. If it's on a downtrend right now, the pattern's just not working how it used to. Because the data does always change and you have to keep up with it. And if you don't keep up with it, you'll have mistakes like I did this year in 2020, where you're late to the punch. You're late to realizing that the pattern has changed and it's not successful anymore. And you're continuously playing it, but the play is kind of dead. And if you're not quick to always keeping up with that, you'll take bigger drawdowns than you wish you did. And that happened to me this year big time.
Gotcha. So how often do you have to revisit? How often does that happen for a systematic trader? How often does like a pattern, your system is like kicking ass, and then all of a sudden it fades away? You need to switch things up to stay, you know, to stay that success, like to keep that success rate.
You know, that's what made me change my approach. And the biggest lesson I did this year was changing my criteria to have, for example, my biggest thing that I learned this year in my data and tracking is to choose criteria that's not going to just, you know, that has withstanded 1 or 2 years of the market. I want to have criteria that has survived and for that a pattern has worked in 2015, 16, 18, 19, 2020, 2021, 2022. I want at least 4 years of data of that same play happening for at least 4 years. Showing consistently with the same criteria working throughout every single one of those markets. I didn't used to have access to data like that in the market, but I actually teamed up. I met a buddy in a trading community. His name is Calvin, and he's really good at coding and he knows how to work Polygon really well. So we teamed up and he knows how to extract any data I want, any idea I have. He can get that market data for me going back to any time I want. And so now all of my patterns, I switched them all this year, that if they didn't work also in 2016 or 17 or 18 and 19, if they didn't work then I don't want to trade them now.
Gotcha.
I have criteria now that's working. I call it like a universal criteria. It survived multiple markets, not just 1 or 2 years. And that's criteria that I use now. It's the only thing I trust now after seeing these big switches in this past year, really.
And so you're talking about pulling data out. Do you use anything like Spike Eats? Or I think I heard Ron recently, Edge to Trade, someone told me about. Do you ever use these?
I've tried Spike Eat. I have used Spike Eat in the past. After using Polygon, there's a lot of errors in Spike Eat, I've noticed. It's good. No, it's good. And if that's all you got, that's fine. It will help you. Cause it's not horrible. It's just, I've seen it misses stuff. I've seen it miss a lot of stuff. And that's the worst thing you can have is, lapses in your data.
Yeah.
The most accurate way, hands down, is tracking it manually 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. You know me, so I use a dilution tracker. I can relate to that because like dilution tracker misses some stuff. It's not perfect. You got to be able to go in the filing and type in this keyword.
Nothing's ever perfect. Not even Polygon's perfect. But I've seen after using all of them, Polygon has been the most accurate.
What is Polygon, by the way? What?
It's basically financial market data, but it's not very user friendly. You have to know how to code in order to access it.
Oh man.
If you learn how to code, you can search endlessly.
Actually, I have a friend that uses, do you know Michael Matthews? He was in the Tim Sykes challenge. He's doing well right now. He uses Polygon. He mentioned it to me. It just, it goes over my head. So see, like,
big
A. I don't know. I don't see myself ever going like, I guess maybe I could if I'm really forced to, but like for me to go that systematic where like I'm using Polygon and Spike Eat and Edge to Trade. And like, for example, I have a friend of mine in Puerto Rico. He's a filings expert. And like, when you talk to him about filings, his eyes light up and like, he's a filings guy.
Yeah.
My eyes don't light up. I pass out. I'm going to go to bed. Like if I start looking at filings. So like, for you, like data, do your like eyes light up when you see a lot of data? You're like, for example,
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love going through it. I analyze it, crossing through it, finding new things. I mean, it's funny because like everyone's like pretty much got access to the same idea. I mean, to the same data, but everybody analyzed it differently. I so interesting. I've seen it time and time again. That and everyone's data differs a little bit. So there's also some reasons where people come to different conclusions. Depending on where you're getting your data from. But that's another reason as well. But yeah, I love filtering through my data and analyzing it and finding new things to make my plays better. Without, what's the word? When you reduce your, sample size too much that you're just concentrating on
like a small sample.
Yeah, using like concentrating too much on a small sample, thinking that without hyper focusing, I guess is the word. You don't want to hyper focus, and because then that'll get you into problems.
So let's say you collect some data, you have a thesis, an idea of what's going on, and you're like, and then an epiphany happens. You're like, all right, I need to explore this and this and this and put it together. Is it like you're like a scientist and you're like, okay, let's try this out, let's back test it. How many, like a million, 100 times, I guess, and get this, like, is that what goes on? And then like, how long?
It takes hours sometimes. It takes hours. It takes sometimes a week to finish something. Because I ended up making a mistake and I have to redo the whole thing. One mistake in your filtering and it will produce everything wrong. My buddy, me and Calvin, any idea I have, anything we started seeing consistently happen, we test. I mean, it never runs out. We have so much on our to-do list and then it just keeps building and building of new ways and new ideas to you know, better factor, better your winnings and reducing your losses. Like for gappers, I've noticed that, you know, if it starts giving you trouble after an hour and it's not really breaking down, that's a new idea I'm trying to test, is after how much certain amount of time am I able to just lower my risk, maybe to high a date or something. After, like, if it doesn't start doing what I want in the first hour, it's already acting up. So I can start testing after an hour of every gapper what's kind of happening. And, you know, just so, there's so many different things you can do. And the idea is you do this never end. I'm in the process of trying to systemize a first red day, hardest pattern systemizing. You don't hear about anyone really systemizing that. It's very, I feel like, a discretionary trade for most people.
Yeah, I actually interviewed Kyle Williams, and he broke it down really well. And the way he broke it down, that was discretionary, super discretionary. And that's the way I saw it. But at the same time, in a way, everything can be partially systematic. I'm pretty sure there's a way to reverse engineer it, because like you said earlier, there's only a few of patterns that happen a certain amount of times a year. Like, for example, a real hardcore first red day, like an AMC, or you saw some of the oil plays this year, went super parabolic, and then like a real first red day.
Rev today. Rev was
Rev. Yeah. I didn't see it completely. I saw it on my phone. Like, it was down a lot, like from what happened recently, multi-day run, and then it just flushed. How often would you say a true first red day happens a year?
Ooh, not a lot. Oh, not a lot at all. Maybe I want to say, like, 9. It's really not
like less than 10. Yeah, for sure. So, let's say you if you're trying to systematize a first red day, you have a bunch in front of you. You pick like 9 of them, and then you just try to find the same qualities as going on with each. You say, okay, let's see. This one went up. They all went up on news. They all had a certain this float. They all had this amount of volume, and then the volume started fading per day. Like, how would you break it down, like, generically, you know?
Right. So for me, it would be that was the hardest part of the first red day, is objectifying it. Because in order to pull data from the market using Polygon, you first need to objectify what you're looking for. That's the thing with system trading, is that everything, you're objectifying everything. So you have to make these rules. So a first red day, I would want something to be at least extended 150% from the start of its run. Boom, first criteria right there. It needs to be up at least 150% from the open of that beginning run day, whatever that is. And it needs to have at least 2 days, right? Otherwise, it's not a multi-day runner. That's another criteria. And, you know, you'll throw that on. I mean, I got some more. And you throw all that on, and eventually you'll pull a net out of the market. If you're pulling data from Polygon, you give it a net of what you're looking for, and then you could start breaking it down from there.
Gotcha. You know, so one thing I've noticed this year, maybe you can share your opinion on it. So a lot of the plays that are happening, like, for example, I see the on IB, you see the borrow rate. The borrow rates are astronomical recently. Like Rev, I saw the borrow rate go from 20% to 40% to 100 to now 160, and then it gave it all back. It's probably going to go down tomorrow. So, and I know this is something that I'm not a system trader, but maybe the system traders should include this in their system. If the borrow rate, because iBorrowDesk.com has historical borrow rate. Right. So if you look at if the borrow rate increases 3x by day number 2, maybe this is not even a trade anymore. So I'm thinking when I see some people on Twitter saying they having drawdowns and stuff, I'm like, maybe they need to look at the borrow, because like AERC, for example, that one had a borrow rate of like a 900 to 1,000% for multiple days, and it looks like it fits all the criteria, but then you look at the borrow rate and there's like, for me, I don't know. Maybe I'm seeing something that other people don't see. I don't know. I thought when I see a borrow rate that high, it's just too toxic for me. I'm like, this is something's going on here. too many people are short, the demand is high, that the bar is this high. Maybe someone turned off their lending. I don't know, but like the number itself could be systematized, I think. And I was talking to someone today. I was like, you know what? Maybe we should start longing some stocks that their bar rate doubles the next day, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you systematize that and backtest it, maybe, I don't know if I have the time to do that, but if someone would, I think it would be pretty, pretty good. And I've never seen borrow rates go this dramatically volatile ever. And I think it's because we're in a different market now. And right. The clearing firms are doing something. I don't even know.
Yeah. You're talking like when like the first red days comes and it's like on the last, you know, getting towards that first red day and the borrow rates are just ridiculously expensive probably every time.
Yeah, like 300%, 400%. And then then it crashes and then it goes down to like under 100%. Yeah.
But that's a good thing. You actually want to see, you kind of want to see that just because it's going to make less people want to short it. And when you start running out of shorts, you know, it can only squeeze so much further when there's not shorts getting in there. I mean, Rev was a perfect example of just, I love when this happens, is the stock. This is the first day that Rev went on Reg Show today. And Reg Show is basically brokers can no longer really, well, most brokers can't give out that stock to short anymore. Or at least you can't like recycle shares at most brokers. And that's always a big indicator for me. You know, when you have like a systematical, like shorts can't even get the shares. You know that thing's running out. You know that thing's, it's coming to the end. No shorts, no squeeze. And Rev, that I was really upset I missed that today because it was on Reg Show. And it collapsed, of course. You know, shorts were done. They couldn't even, most brokers couldn't even short it today.
So with Reg Shows, do you track Reg Shows?
I used to do that manually. Yeah, I do, but I've
manually.
Yeah, manually. It's the only thing you can only do that.
Yeah,
manually.
Yeah.
And yes, there is a pretty, when it's, there's no more shorts. The shorts can't short the stock.
Yeah.
The huge edge for short sellers, if you can find those shares.
So is that common for you to manually track? Because there's factors that, you know, like, for example, when I'm going to compare this to baseball. When I played baseball many years ago in college and high school, I was a leadoff hitter. And like, there was, I don't know if you're a baseball guy at all or not. But anyway, in baseball, there's no statistic for like a hitter annoying the pitcher, you know? So, and when you annoy the pitcher, the guy on the base can steal the base. There's no stat for that. So like I used to crowd the plate, you know, to make the strike zone, I could get hit by the ball. So I'm increasing the chances and the pitcher is annoyed by that and he's messing up. So there's no stat for that. So like if in hindsight now, if I were to track that, I would track to see if I was closer to the plate, what the results are of like the guy stealing a base. But anyway, what I'm saying is that like there's things that like no one really tracks. It's when you track baseball stuff, you track like home runs, hits, you know, the standard stuff. Like with trading, there's a lot of stuff you track the standard stuff as well. But then there's like this, like tracking the Reg Show, you know, like that's information you can only see as you go.
Right.
You know, and actually, I don't even know if you can find all the Reg Show stocks per day. If there's a list, maybe
you Google it. You go to the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange list, and it shows it every day. Other update.
Yeah. So that's the, so how often would you go in and do it manually, like track things manually, like get an instant idea to do it? And there's no way else to do it.
I always do it on first red days when a stock gets extended. That's the times that I see it happening the most. When they get to the end of the run, so many of these first red days, of course, on the last day, go on Reg Show and then it falls apart. I've seen it multiple times. And on gappers, it happens on gappers sometimes, but it's sometimes I don't always check. So I feel like I'm missing pieces, you know. But a lot of times my brokers will tell me that it's on Reg Show, either because they can't find any shares because it's on Reg Show, or they'll either tell me that, remember that you can't recycle these. Like, for example, Cobra, you borrow Reg Show shares, you can only short them. As soon as you cover, you lose those shares and you have to reborrow. And, you know, so just they'll give me a reminder that But I make it more of an active, conscious decision now to just be sure to check if it's gapping up, is it on reg show? And if it's, you know, on a multi-day run, is it on reg show? Because it really just takes a sec to check it online.
Gotcha. Okay. And you mentioned the recycling share. So how, did you find a way to systematize that as well? Or like, how do you go about it?
Centerpoint avoids that rule. I don't know how they do it. But for Centerpoint, if you can find the shares on their platform, they will let you recycle the shares. So
you're talking about reg show stocks.
Yeah. For reg show stock. Centerpoint in short and cover all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, cool. So you use Centerpoint. Actually, I just opened up a Centerpoint a couple months ago. And like, did you know you get free trade ideas with Centerpoint now?
What?
Yeah. So like, got to get that figured out.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. And they include a trend spider. I don't even know how to use it yet. It's on my to-do list, but it's free also.
I got to call them.
Yeah, it's pretty sick. With recycling shares, is that part of like the way you trade without ratio or whatever? Do you recycle shares or do you just put
for me? And maybe 20-25% of the time. The vast majority of the time, I don't. I'm pretty patient. I wait for my, you know, I hit my entry and then I wait for my profit targets or my exit, one or the other. And if they don't come, then I just wait for my exit. So that's usually what I'm doing most of the time. But every now and then, if it's a really severe drop, you know, and it's going to obvious support level, I'm gonna hit some and get back in on a bounce.
Are you aiming for like taking out the human emotion in the trade? Like you want to factor yourself out of the trade because like Absolutely. So when did you realize that? Like, okay, like I can trade better if I am, if I make this like almost like a robot, you know,
I just found it when I started doing it and testing it and trading like that and just watching my profits compound and the accuracy with it. That's when I did it. It was right in 2020. I mean, it's also when I first saw my brother who is a beginner who he just started trading and he's using my system that I built that I haven't even tested yet. And he's just doing, he just pulled it and he's just following it exactly. And he made more money than me, like $4,000 than me in one day. And then that's when I knew I was like, okay, I got to do this too. That's insane. I can't let my brother walk in here and start making more money than me. He hasn't even traded yet.
He just walked in the door.
That's what did it. Yes.
Yeah. So how were you doing it before, like discretionary style?
I would use the data as more of a directional edge and trade the price action.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what's your favorite ideal setup?
Right now, I got to say a gap. I mean, gappers, but the only gappers I'm hitting now are when they have resistance. I really need some resistance in there. I don't really trust any other gappers right now unless there's some supply up in those gap areas.
Yeah.
That is my favorite setup right now. I'm still hitting, super overextended gap downs. If they're really extended enough, I got a criteria for that. I have a day two play. I'm working on a parabolic play, which is like a mover, a stock, doing a specific objectified spike midday into either resistance or something. That is something I play, but I think my favorite has got to be the gappers and resistance and my day two play.
Gotcha. And like
overextended gap downs kind of.
So a gap up, is that like, would you consider like I see it as overextended gap downs sometimes, like they go up in they keep going all day long and then in the after hours a little more and then like, by the morning, it's down significantly. Would you consider that, or how are you? What's your criteria for a gapper?
It needs to be gapping up, at least like 50%, and there needs to be some sort of supply involved. Ideally, there's some dilution as well. That'd be great. The bigger the gap, the better. obviously, it's just more that much more room for it to come down. You know, I don't want to be doing anything below, you know, no 1 million floats. I won't be touching.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So with that, okay, 1 second. So what, like you back tested 1 million floats, I imagine, right?
Yeah.
And like, what was the result? Like,
it was pretty
disaster.
It's pretty wild. They're really squeezy. They're dangerous. You can get the trouble. I mean, especially under 1 million, anything sub one, just, I'm pretty sure there is a long edge in those. I'm sure you want to be buying those ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet.
So, and then 1 to 2 million. There's an edge there for sure on the short side if it's 1 to 2. But they're different. They have more range of wildness. And so I want mine to be above a 2 million float always. I found that 2 is a pretty solid, is my minimum, you know, like under 2, watch out. Above 2, that's where I'm at.
Man, you know, when you say that, like I remember I heard Duck say that a long time ago before COVID. He had an interview with like Tim Sykes and one of his first ones. And he said, I just don't touch anything under 2 million.
Yeah. They're different. You can see them in the data. And it's consistent.
Yeah. Even during COVID and all that, did it change at all during all the volatility?
During COVID? Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's still under 2 or, I mean, really for under 1 is awful. 1 to 2. Different category of that I've seen from how I interpret it. And then above 2 is okay. And did it change? No, they stayed pretty, the data is pretty consistent for, you know, under 2 million and under 1 million.
Gotcha.
Yeah, huh. It's just the pattern success rate has changed now. But in 2020, everything was working. I mean, you could have just woken up every day and shorted every gapper and you would have had just an incredible year. As long as you, you know, knew how not to get killed on those black swans.
Yeah. So this year, for example, what would you say have been like your favorite trades or potential favorite? Like, for example, what comes to mind, like for a gapper is we talked about Rev or maybe SIGA, SIGA. Was that one? The monkeypox?
Oh, I didn't touch that one.
Yeah, it went crazy. Maybe there was a couple others. I don't know. Maybe you want to go over some notable trades from 2020 to now.
I guess my biggest one was EVAX. Probably my biggest winner. That was it's just a giant gapper on the day, and the newsletter, you know, the chat rooms were buying it right out the open, and you know, I'm sure you're familiar with some shady chat rooms out there. I don't want to drop any names, but you know, they have followers and they're buying it up and they're kind of selling into them and you can kind of see it. And,
yeah. Yeah. And is it the guy with the ponytail?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And he made me probably one of my biggest trades buying up into that because I laid into it. Because also, you know, it was a gapper.
What was the percentage that it got?
I think well over 100%. I think it was like a 200% gapper.
So today, I didn't get BHAT. I didn't get that. Actually went. Okay, so you go. So that one, was that a COVID play, like a vaccine or something?
That was, no, just some random, you know, typical garbage pump gapper news on the day. And it was on what? November 4th, I think, 2021.
Oh, so not that long ago.
Annihilated right out of the gate. It dropped like $8 a share. I just was watching. I couldn't believe it. And covered it up all the way at the bottom. And I got back in on a bounce. And it just, everything worked so perfectly. Really good executed trade. And still my favorite one to this day.
Wow. So, okay. So how do you manage risk with these trades? Like, do you give yourself like three bullets? Or like, did you come up with a system to...
Yeah, I have a statistical, you know, data proven levels of where I want to get out on the stock. And I find those by tracking, you know, how far these things can push, how far they can spike. And at what point, if a stock gets to a certain point, do I need to get out and take a max loss so that I can live to survive another day not continuously getting squeezed, like getting on a black swan, and taking a max loss to the point where I know I can recover from.
Gotcha. And how did you come up with your max loss? And like, so how disciplined do you need to be a true systematic trader? Like, are you like that max loss is that's it on the
dot? You gotta get out. Yeah. If you fight it, that could be the end of your career that day. It might be a spy, SPI coming at you. And
yeah, again, I remember that. Yeah. So what comes to mind, for example, you mentioned Grittani, and I guess Grittani's systematic. Yeah, for sure. He's had those big losses, 300K, 100K. So that's just a human error. Because if he would have followed system, it doesn't go that high. Or like, I remember one time he said he left, he was short of stock, small size, and then DWAC or something, and then went on vacation and forgot about it.
Yeah, you know? I remember that was that stock that, I forget which one that it was that Trump stock.
PHUN?
It wasn't DWAC, but it was, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Fun, no?
No, it wasn't fun. If you said the name, I would, that was it.
Yeah.
But I remember that one. And yeah, that sucked, poor guy.
he puts it in there and goes to the beach and comes back.
And he was in, a small shares too, but the thing was flying away, 600%. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah. So how often will a human error happen with do you consider that as a statistic as well? Because for example, I used to work when I was in my 20s, I worked at a retail at the mall, and they always considered people are going to steal. That's 10% of the profits. So how much percentage do you consider human error?
Oh, I mean, personally, that's why it's actually, system trading is very hard, because we are humans. And, that's the whole part about trading, because you can have a system and still break all your rules. And I'm guilty of doing that myself, but that's where you break a rule enough and you get bit hard enough. That's when you reach the psychological point of I'll never break that rule again. And every now and time you'll break it, but if you get hit hard enough, you will follow that rule, in my opinion. But if you can't be disciplined like that, I mean, that's going to differentiate, the future of your success. So, if you don't get out at your max loss or whatever, that's a pretty good indicator sign, in my opinion, of how successful you're going to be with system trading. If you think I'm just going to hold off and wait it out, and not follow the rules and get out of my max loss, then, I mean, you don't know if that's going to be a spy that day. And you could just be another trader in the game blown up.
And for those who are listening, what you're saying, spy, that's not the SPY. SPI, yeah. I think you can go over it, but I think it went to $40 intraday and came straight down.
Black Swan day went from $3 to $50, $60 maybe in one day. It was unreal.
And then came straight down. There's a couple of them that have done that for no reason, right? There's no news or anything.
Yeah.
It's like some kind of short squeeze, some anomaly, and that'll take you out. I blew up a lot of short sellers.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So how do you go about dilution? So in the past, when I was starting out, I didn't think system traders could consider fundamentals, but now you have these services like Dilution Tracker and some others that allow you to categorize and start systematizing these things.
Dilution Tracker is so good. I use that the most now. I used to use Flash SEC, which was good too, but Dilution Tracker is it's just better, in my opinion. It's most accurate. It always has the most accurate float as well. I noticed Dilution Tracker.
Yeah, it's updated.
Yeah, they're really good about updating their everything. That's something that I've been trying to systemize. It's really tough. I don't think you can really use Dilution Tracker's AP token, but I think on Flash SEC you can. And I think I'm trying to figure out how to collect data, go in using a Flash AP token to go through every gapper that I have, and see if they had an ATM that day that was active. or, you know, something like that, some sort of small filters like that, and try to correlate that with gappers to systemize it. I haven't fully done that yet, you know. For dilution, it's always just been kind of like a bonus, a plus. If it's there, I'm just that much more confident in the trade that day, rather than using it to actually systematically use data from it, because it's a lot to track. I used to, but I'm working on systemizing dilution. It's not something I have, but it's in the works.
Gotcha. And along those lines, but there's a way to systematize that somehow, but like, there's no really way to do like level two or figuring out if there's an algo in there, I guess maybe if there's a certain amount of volume jumping around, but like, how do you go about that? How do you navigate that? Do you just like let the system play out and just, you
know? It's funny, volume. I have tried, you know, everyone swears, like, first, for the dilution part, the things that I would look for is, you know, how much cash they have left. You know, if they have less than 3 months of cash left, then it's a pretty good, and they have dilution ready to use, it's really good odds they're going to probably want to use that dilution. So that's one thing. I used to track dilution that way. And then for volume, so many people swear by a volume forecast, the volume forecast, right?
Yeah.
It's going crazy. It's pretty good answer. I mean, I've tested. I can't find it. I've analyzed volume forecasts so many times, and it seems so random. Maybe people have looked at it a different way than me. Sure, that's fine. And maybe they figured it out, but volume seems to be so random when it comes to these patterns.
Because the volume might front load in the morning and then just be completely gone.
Exactly, and then just be completely gone. And I've seen I've heard Short Bear talk about it one time, or was it All Day Faders? They actually, one of the things they look for is if, I think they said in the video one time, if they see a ton of volume, but it's showing weakness on the day with a ton of volume, they see that as a short bias. They think they know where the supply is coming from, because it's showing weakness with tons of volume, meaning that sellers are just obviously here. There's a lot of supply here that day. But I've checked volume forecast. I've checked volume in all my patterns, and my conclusion is that it is fairly random.
Yeah.
And I can't make any judgment based off how much volume it's trading, because the thing could be trading 100 million volume and you could just have like the cleanest fake, something like, you know, a really big, nice fake, and it just fails all day. So I don't know.
Gotcha. And, okay, so this year, okay, so traders all got to go through drawdowns, and you've had a ton of success. It's like, okay, now it's like it's market's changing, it's part of the game, drawing down, and now I got to figure out and create a better, evolve the system. So how are you going about that now? That whole process of market changing, you know, configuring the system to like adapt as well.
Yeah, that's how I changed my standard of my criteria, a very high standard. I'm not going to just use criteria that's been working for a year or 2 years. I need my criteria to have been successful for at least 4 years. Ideally, I mean, it's all the way back to 2015 is my standard now. For gappers, if my gapper that works today wasn't working in 2017 or 18, then to me, that's not a healthy, successful gapper anymore. So I changed my standard of having my patterns of success with longevity, and not just working the year of 2020 or the year of 2021, because it changes.
Gotcha. And what was the biggest like aha moment as far as noticing the change in markets like that, and noticing, okay, I need to go back further. I need to, you know, really dive deep into this, because this is everything's changed.
Right. First off, maybe the drawdowns I dealt with this year, it's been a really tough year for me, toughest year yet for me in trading. And so I really had to adapt, and I had to, you know, really figure out a criteria that's not going to just flip on me whenever it wants. And, you know, my friend that I started working with, he's one that suggested to me, hey, I have all this data for this pattern from before these years, and what you're doing now didn't work then, but sure, it worked here. We should find something that has worked every single year, you know? And that was a big aha. I was like, that's a great idea. I think you're totally right. We need to do that. Because I can't take the risk of, you know, not keeping up with my data and just something just not working all of a sudden and being late to the punch. If you're late to the punch, your account will take a massive hit for systematic trading.
Gotcha. And what do you think in general was your aha moment as far as just becoming profitable and like just data. Making the switch, your data and making the switch sure. systematic and all that?
Just yeah. Data is my aha moment. You know, Grittani and Ducks, probably my biggest, what's career? I mean, inspirations, people I've learned from. They scream data on the top of their lungs. They teach it, they share it, they show it. I mean, you know, not maybe every part of it. I mean, I know they probably got some stuff they keep to themselves, obviously, but they show you the door, and I've found success with it, and it makes the most sense to me. And I think it really gives you the best edge, but it's a lot of work. Cause you got to keep up with it, make all these spreadsheets, but data to me is king.
Absolutely. And I'm going to begin to wrap it up now. So like, okay. So going when I think about Ducks, for example, and the data and all that from like, I saw him from the beginning since 2017, I saw him, evolve. And like now he's about, okay, I don't touch anything. Like, I don't know. I think he, from what I remember, like anything under $6, I'm only going to trade a couple times a month. Yeah. And it has
when to did be you say that? That's so, because that in 2021, so in 2020, gappers, it didn't matter the price of the stock, any price worked. In 2021, under $6 gappers just fell apart.
So I think it was $6 exactly. I have a pretty good memory, so I think that's what he said, because I remember watching one of his webinars that someone gave me to watch, and he's like not chewing out people, but he's telling the people are presenting trades to him, he's like, oh, under $6, why are you trading that? It's like low probability, the highest probability. But the thing is with him, he has a lot of capital now, so like like for example, when a big EVAX or something shows up, he hits that hard. And, I noticed like myself, even as my accounts and capital keeps growing, like my plays are going, changing with it, you know? So how often do you revisit like what kind of trades you're putting on and all that? As like every so often when you hit certain milestones and profits or capital to trade with, you kind of got to revisit the way I think you got to revisit the way you're trading. Like, does it fit the amount of capital you have? You know?
Right. That's hilarious that Jux said that, because I haven't seen that yet, but he's totally right. By the way, I've seen that in the data.
I think he said it in his summit. It was only like, it's a summit. Yeah. He sells it on, I think it's on discount for like $50 or something on his website.
Yeah. So how do I go about my sizing and to my account size?
Yeah.
What I use is a version of the Kelly system. And basically it's, you know, depending on the win rate of the pattern that you're using in your data, it will suggest to you the amount of size that you should put in on that. And essentially I use a version of it. I don't use it exactly. I'm not the best with the math. My brother kind of takes care of that side. He's really good at math. So when it came to learning the Kelly system, that was nothing for him. He's just always been really good.
Wait, so you guys read the whole book?
Not the whole book, but he just learned it from, he learned it online. We actually learned it from Chris Verma. Actually taught us the Kelly system on how to, you know, to size in the trades that way. It's actually really, because it compounds profit really well. I use a version of it. I don't use it exactly like they do. My brother does, and he'll share it with me, but I kind of just, you know, choose if it's a really high win rate, I'll use a higher percentage of my account that day. So like on my best pattern, I'm willing to risk 20% of my account. And I'll do that every single time. And, you know, I'll have occasional downswings, but the upswings are always so much more, and the compounding growth becomes exponential. It just continues to grow it, as long as, you know, the pattern's not changing. But what I'll do is I'll, you know, put it in my Excel sheet and have the equation set up, and then choose different account percentages of what I want to risk, and then check the profit chart and see how volatile it is. Because, you know, if it's too volatile, I'm obviously not going to do that. Because, you know, I'm human. I can only handle so much emotion and swings. So I'll choose, swings that I'm comfortable with based off the profit chart on my Excel sheet.
Interesting, man. And whoever wants to look into that more, Ed Thorpe was the creator of the Kelly Capital Criterion. Yeah. And he has a book. It's very dense. I was never like high-end calculus.
Yeah.
But he used that. You can correct me if I'm wrong, to like get kicked out of Las Vegas. Like, he was using it for poker and like how to bet with more size or something like that. And the concept is, yeah, whatever is higher odds, you bet more. You bet a bigger amount. Right.
If you keep doing that same bet over and over with the odds that you're playing with, the theory is that you'll have exponential growth. Right.
Yeah. And by the way, Ed Thorpe, he had an interview recently with Tim Ferriss. It's on YouTube. It's pretty sick. An hour long. The guy is like 93 years old. He looks 50 years younger. You know, he's crazy. Well. But yeah, so Evan, where do you see yourself in the future with trading?
Good question. You know, I'm just finishing my patterns. I mean, just continuing this. Maybe one day, you know, get into the education route. I'm not there yet. Don't plan on, you know, opening a room anytime soon, but I can see myself maybe eventually getting there. It's a lot of work though. The guys that do it. I don't know if I want to go that far.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I'm in the same boat as you, man. I'm like, yeah. I gotta focus on this right
now.
Yeah.
I love the thing. Yeah. You know, I love the freedom I get. You know, I'm probably gonna travel the world pretty soon. I plan on doing that. I've actually doing more traveling this year than I ever done. But I mean, travel the world as in I need to go, you know, across the waters. I need to go to Europe. I need to get out of North America.
Yeah.
And so that's what I want to do that. But in trading, I don't know, maybe I'll venture over to options one day. I've been reading my first option book actually recently.
Nice.
But I have a lot of patterns that I still need to complete here. I mean, it just never ends. I'm always, you know, doing stuff, updating something, or trying to find something new. So, in the future, maybe options is where I might eventually get to.
Awesome. And to start to close it out. So any book recommendations?
You know, I haven't read, I think, a single trading book.
Okay. Not even the Kelly Criterion. You get like the Cliff Notes, or you let your brother do it?
No, I just learned that straight from Chris Verma on that one. My brother is actually, I still don't even fully know the equation for the Kelly. I know how to do it more in the simple version of it. It's still five. But it's just not the exact identical. He knows how to do it.
And you got on the Excel sheet. It does. You just plug it in.
Yeah. You just plug it in. So I'm just going to copy his equation soon enough, but mine's fine. It's just the same. It's just a little, basically the same thing. So.
Gotcha. And so where can people get a hold of you? Like on Twitter and stuff? You're pretty friendly. I mean, I reached out to you out of nowhere. You're probably like, who is this guy? And so like pretty open.
Yeah. So. On Twitter at eshunk8 is where I, send me a message anytime. I'm pretty responsive. You can catch me on Instagram, but not much there. It's just me. If you want
to go. Cool.
But yeah, Twitter.
Cool. All right, Evan, man. Well, thanks for taking the time out to share the wealth of knowledge, man. It's pretty cool to finally get in touch with you. Someone in LA too. Maybe we'll go. I'll see you for some coffee or something soon.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Yeah, man. Well, take care, Evan. I'll talk to you later.
Sure. Thank you for having me. All right. Take care.
For sure.
That concludes today's episode. Make sure to like and subscribe to the channel on the platform you use. The Friendly Bear Podcast is hosted by me, David, where you can find me on Twitter at reverse_long. You can find the Friendly Bear Podcast at www.thefriendlybearpodcast.com. as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, and now on YouTube at Friendly Bear Research. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Friendly Bear Podcast.